Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Reveille, reveille, reveille!
Another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have five rounds in the magazine. Five. I thought we went five, then went back to four. Now we're back at five. Florida man made the fucking list, Kate.
Made the list.
Round number one. Will Smith needs to stand six and center after his inappropriate action at the Oscars might end up with him being busted down, but at the very least, he's going to have a little bit of fire watch. Round number two. We have some lessons in leadership. Do not ask your people to do what you aren't willing to do with yourself, and that includes going on an all-air diet. Round number three, ASVAB waiver required. A woman went viral for her outdoorsy vibe. Should she be allowed to join the military? We'll discuss that. Round number four, I texted Connor on Saturday night after I read an article about the NCO Corps failing miserably in Russia. It's time to take a look at just how invaluable the NCOs really are when it comes to war. And finally, round number five, a Florida man tried to steal a bulletproof vest worn by a SEAL Team 6 member in the Bin Laden raid, but fortunately, he didn't have the stealth capacity to pull that.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
All right, let's get going with the actual show today, because last night, I mean, when is the last time, just off the top of your head, that you've even cared about the Oscars in the slightest bit?
It's been a long time.
I might say ever.
No, I used to enjoy them. Like the early days of Twitter, right out of the 2010s, the early 2010s, when Twitter was still good, I think they were still pretty good. Because also back then, I think there were more movies that were being seen by a lot of people. The whole revolution of the streaming industry hadn't really taken hold, so people were still going to movies. Dude, 2011, 2012, I was going to the movies, to the actual theater, sometimes 2-3 times a week if there were good movies out, and that's just not happening anymore. So I think less people now are seeing these movies that are up for Best Picture and all the other awards. So It's been a while, though, for sure. At least maybe like a decade.
I mean, I think the Oscars has always been the worst of all of the award shows. Like, give me the Grammys, give me the Billboard, give me the VMAs, all of those before, because they have better music artists that come in. It's more entertaining than just going up there and watch somebody. Who cares about set design?
Oh, yeah, with those shit. With those, also, there's performances, and that's, I think, what makes it the more enjoyable
right
show.
And that's the Twitter like moments, because awards. The Oscar yes didn't have Twitter moments before. Like, they didn't have that shit. So last night, if you've been living under a rock.
I just want to say, I stopped caring after Joan Rivers died. I was just there for the outfits and roasting the outfits. That's all I cared about.
That's fair.
Carry on.
Okay, so last night, whenever the Oscars was going on, you had Chris Rock and the typical comedians, and I think it's very commonplace for them to roast each other. Like Ricky Gervais, for example, is constantly just an asshole to every single celebrity whenever he's hosting one of these things. Last night, I think it was probably a perfect storm of Will Smith just being sick of being the butt of jokes for so long, after all the different information came out about how Jada was in like an entanglement. And in 2016, Chris Rock made fun of the Smiths a lot. And I think that there was probably just some bad blood. Like for us, for example, like I think there's a drastic difference when somebody that is your buddy or somebody that you're friends with makes fun of you. Like that's why our relationship with Connor works, because at the core, we're friends with him. If we didn't actually
sometimes like, it's tough to tell.
Well, it's gonna get tougher. Like if there was times that we didn't actually like him, we would just come off as an asshole, and Connor would be rightful and to slap me across the face the next time he saw me. That's kind of what happened with Chris Rock. But there was some takes that were flying, and I think it was because there was a little bit of violence surrounding it. I have to admit, when I first saw it, I was not concerned at all for Chris Rock.
No. Yeah,
Chris Rock makes a joke about Jada's hair loss. Mm-hmm. Everything seems fine. There's a quick moment where you see Will Smith and Jada kind of laughing. It looks like, well, Jada's not, but Will's kind of laughing. And the next thing you know, he walks on stage and it's a perfect slap right across Chris Rock's face. But like, I still am wondering if everybody's thinking it's real, it's fake, it's real, it's fake. I'm wondering if just between the two of them, they know.
No, this is absolutely, I don't care how good of an actor Will Smith is. If he acted that, keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth. If he acted that, they should give him another Oscar. There has never been a person in the history of the world who has acted as good as that would take, because he had that little shake in his voice. And it's, I've had it, like when somebody messes with your wife and you get this, it's almost like a righteous indignation. And it's not like a protective, it's, and it would be anybody, like somebody that you care about that much. If they get fucked with and your voice shakes, where it's almost like, if I scream, I'm going to fucking weep and cry. Like, I'm so angry right now. That's how Will Smith's face was. There is zero shot that was faking it. None whatsoever.
I don't think so either. You're right. Cause he had that, I think probably what it is adrenaline pumping through his brain. And it was crazy to see him laugh at first. And then we've been there where you're laughing at something and you look at your significant other and you're like, wait, I shouldn't be laughing at this. And then a switch just kind of flipped, which was kind of crazy. But for him to go, I mean, anybody walking on stage when they're not supposed to at an award show, I think takes a certain level of gravitas to just think, I don't care about anything that's going on right now. I'm going to interrupt this show.
It's like that time I gave an impromptu speech at the Marine Corps Ball with Dave.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. People just thought you were going adrenaline. Up there to shake someone's hand. But I mean, for him to go up and then slap him physically like that, that was the last thing. If you gave everybody $1 billion to guess what he was going to do, nobody would have landed on he's going to smack him.
I think one of the reasons I still am like, is it fake? Is that Chris Rock just kept right on rolling.
Is he supposed to do though? Like, I feel like in that moment, if somebody walks across your, like, I think he did exactly what a normal person, like, what? I just got fucking slapped, but I'm still on stage on one of the biggest award shows in the history of the world and live streamed everywhere in the fucking world. What do I do at this moment? And it's not like Chris Rock is not some fucking, he's not going to be confused with Daniel Day-Lewis at any point for being like having all these acting chops. He's in like comedy movies. He's not a deep actor in that way. There's no shot he was pretending. There's no shot Will Smith. I can't believe Dave said it. Dave is usually so spot on with that and him losing his fastball a little bit. Maybe so, because Dave would not, the fact that Dave wasn't sure if that was real.
Fake. Yeah.
I was shocked.
I'm still not sure. I'm still waiting for the two of them to be like, we got you all.
No, that would have came out right away. Coming. The media members, all the different media members saying, don't ask them about it because they want to be able to talk to their publicists and stuff before. Like everybody else that was going out there, don't ask them about it. I was blown away.
Consider this, we
got to get past the point. If you are the type of person that is constantly going after somebody else's spouse or going after people that you have to expect to be slapped in the face at some point. I disagree with that. Like for me, if I was insulting to somebody, who have I been the most insulting to? Probably Lindsey Graham. If Lindsey Graham got sick of me and slapped me because I've called him a bitch so many times and was constantly egging at him. And then it came out that I was doing it something that was deeply personal. Like for you, Kate, if, like, let's say you're going through postpartum depression or anything that you've been actually really concerned about in your own personal life, that is, like, or if somebody made fun of me for my kid, like to my face, that's what Jada's going through with alopecia. Like, and you know that is a huge deal for women losing your hair, like not feeling beautiful, especially somebody that's made so much money partly because of how she looks as well as her skills acting.
I was going to say part of her job is her appearance. So
and then he looks over. This has been a source of contention. This is, speaking as somebody who's been married for 12 years, Jada and Will, without a doubt, 1,000% have had so many conversations of, why don't you stick up for me? I want you to voice like these types of things. When somebody makes fun of me, why don't you say anything? Why were you just quiet? It was another one of those opportunities. He looked over, saw Jada's face and was like, not this time. I'm fucking opening my mouth and slapping Chris Rock across his bitch ass face.
I also mm-hmm. have to wonder if Chris Rock and Will Smith like have some other underlying drama. Like if Chris Rock knew he was getting a jab in.
Has to. Has to. Because it happened in 2016. He made fun of him a lot too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that all of that matriculates simply just from that one joke. There's got to be some underlying things going on between
and
those two.
Comedians need to quit acting like there's not going to be any repercussions for what they say. Like they're all like, oh, we get canceled for saying stuff. No, it's a repercussion. You talk about the wrong person's spouse, and you're going to get slapped in the mouth. Like, that's mm-hmm. life. Like, when people – I've seen – Dragonfly Jones actually said it. He said it best when he's like, people are acting like, oh, so now when people have big disagreements and you make fun of somebody, you might catch a smack to the face. This is the type of world that we're living in. That's the type of world we've always lived in.
Right, right. And not for nothing. I mean, Chris Rock, for as long as he's been in the game – this is the first time I think he's been assaulted.
That's pretty good, dude. Joke. 20 years pretty to good get track slapped record. In the mouth. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So it was just one thing initially when I watched it, before I watched it in slow-mo, it looked like Chris Rock took the slap a little bit. Like he moved his face. I remember when I did the Dark Knight Rises, they had to teach us how to like fake fight and to sell it. And you have to know what's coming and you can move your face and body and head ahead of time, and a little bit that's what it seemed like. And same thing, and Nick can check me here, same thing in wrestling, a little bit you might catch a little bit of the physical contact, but you're already moving your head, so you don't really absorb as much of that slap. Initially it looked like it could have been that, and I think we're all just so conditioned, not just us, but I think the world in general,
we're but just I also don't understand like why people fake. Would say you have Will Smith, who's like, well, he's like 6'5", right? Like Will Smith's a big
no he's not 6'5", he's maybe 6'1", 6'2".
Let's really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna look it up right now. What do you think, Kate?
Well, so there was the 2016. There was the 2016 opener where he went in really hard against Jada in a bunch of different ways. And then in 2018, Will Smith posted a birthday tribute to his ex-wife, who's the mother of his adult son Trey. And Rock left a comment on the post saying, "Wow, you have a very understanding wife." And Smith, yeah. So people responded like, "Don't hate, you're such a hater," whatever. So Chris Rock inserted himself out of nowhere on a family post. So Chris Rock's definitely
had a coming. People don't want to say that. People are like, oh, you know, fuck that. Chris Rock had it coming. You make fun of somebody's spouse. You better. And that spouse has a direct line to you. If you don't want that, you better not fucking say it.
Also, yeah, well, I love.
Go ahead.
The Academy tweeted that it does not condone violence in any form. This is the best thing that's happened for the Academy in the last 20 years.
It. They're
this
loving
is
it.
The greatest thing that could have possibly happened for them. Mm-hmm. So
there's a big winner. Honestly, it was great for me. I had a fantastic time. This is what we needed in the world. Like I tweeted last night. I thought it would have been incredible if Val Kilmer would have came out and DDT Tom Cruise out of nowhere.
That was pretty funny. That was really funny.
I need more celebrity violence. Like not like serious violence, not like gun violence.
Celebrity
or death like
match.
That.
Let's bring that back on MTV.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, Chris Rock doesn't even have a canker sore in his mouth from what Will Smith did. There's nothing. Like he just got the only thing that happened is his pride. But Will Smith is such a great he has such a great like folder of everything that he's been in that he will always be Will Smith. He's now won an Oscar for the lead actor and got an Oscar for that. He's been in other big time movies. Chris Rock does not have that same level of fame. Chris Rock
I disagree.
Be the guy who got slapped by Will Ferrell or Will Smith.
No shot, dude. No way. You realize how big Chris
I think
Rock
they're pretty equally
the
famous
world?
In their own
no,
way.
No, not equally
I think
Will
so.
Smith is
dude, Will Smith has a bigger
Will
no,
Smith.
No, I disagree.
I think you're underestimating Chris Rock.
Blockbusters, yes. Will Smith is far and away, and obviously he had his music career, but Chris
this
Rock
is insane.
Is
I'm about to
a
tweet
very
it right
high
now.
Level of fame.
So when you're listening to this episode, I'm tweeting it out right now. It is 12:26 right now. I'm going to put out a poll. Who is more famous? And it's going to be an absolute bloodbath. What do you guys think?
On,
I think it's going
on,
to be 90-10.
I'm on Team Chaps. I'm on Team Chaps for the record. I don't even think it's close.
I think it's pretty even.
No
I'll say.
Way.
Dude, but I mean, people forget Chris Rock was on Saturday Night Live. He's had a very prominent stand-up career. He's arguably one of the top 10 comedians of all time. People
I would
make
say
that
but
argument.
He's not still not in the same stratosphere as Will Smith.
Yeah.
For a while, Will Smith was the biggest star in Hollywood. Like,
yeah.
Not,
yeah.
Hit, the only one that might be comparable at the same time of Will Smith's height was Tom Cruise.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Tom Cruise and Will Smith is it, like as like 90s actor. I mean, he had the best TV show on, like the highest watched TV show. He had all the, I mean, Armageddon, Men in Black, Wild West, all those movies back to back to back.
I mean, Wild West isn't helping your argument here.
Wild West was a blockbuster
great
smash.
Great song though. Great song
no,
though.
It was not.
Wild West.
Anyway, what's the point here? What's the point here of all this? What do you want to say? Are you mad at Will Smith? Do you think he did a good thing?
I am because listen, I'm going to say this. I don't condone that he smacked him because a few reasons. Number one, you got to know where you are. And now, unfortunately, something that was 30 years in the making, him winning an Oscar, is going to always be overshadowed by what he did. Something that was so well-deserved. His Oscar was so well-deserved after his entire body of work that Chaps just mentioned will forever be overshadowed.
So now he's being overshadowed for being a great husband, I would say.
No, I don't think he's a good husband. No, I don't think he's a good husband.
Oh, I do. And I think there's lots of women. Okay, let's put yourself in the shoes. You're not really violent types. This might not be a fair question. Something like that happens. You're extremely embarrassed on a national stage. And next thing you know, your husband of 10, 15 years, however long they've been married, slaps the shit out of somebody and then walks calmly back to his seat. And the next 10 minutes later, he gets an Oscar. 23-year-old Kate is giving that dude an absolute glock.
I disagree. I think he could have done something.
No, the question is not for you, Cons. You're not okay, sucking anybody's dick, Kate.
I would say only I'll decide if that's the case.
It's your husband. I'm sure it's fine. You're a hypothetical.
Well, then
husband.
We're just doing it. And then at that point, we're probably just doing hand job, half True. Of a hand job and then True. Putting the news on and saying, nah, tomorrow True. Maybe. I got heartburn.
I just think he looks like the smaller of the two now. I really do that. The physical, because like he's been reduced. It's like Chris Rock took a very low shot and he responded by hitting him. And people are going to, again, have that overshadow his accomplishment that night. I think if he just sat in his seat and screamed at him, that would have been a viable thing. I think the best thing would have been to pull him aside.
I think it's worse. I think just sitting there screaming at him worse than slapping him in the face. I think if you're gonna go that far, you gotta slap somebody.
I have to say, of all the different forms of violence he could have chosen, let's put on our little McMap hats for a second here. You're a tan belt, you're brand new, you're Will Smith fresh out of the Marine Corps. You know, the neck chop. Mm-hmm. I feel like the neck chop would have been fucking badass, especially if you hit Chris Rock right in the jugular and just plopped
an
him right there.
An arterial stun is what Kate's talking about.
An arterial stun, a jab up to the nose would have been brutal. Having seen Chris Rock with a bloody nose trying to complete the thing.
Yeah.
A leg sweep.
I feel like, leg sweep would be good because those gives you big time headaches because you smash your head against the ground.
Right. I feel like
if
there's
you don't
a lot
do a
of
proper
different...
break falls. I feel like you're right there, Kate, that if he would have done anything... An actual close fist. The worst thing that could have happened to Will Smith if he knocks Chris Rock out. Like if
yeah,
you knock Chris Rock,
perfect. A slap
if you're 5'8",
perfect level of force.
If you're that big and you hit somebody smaller and you knock them out on stage while they're wearing a tuxedo, I feel like everybody looks down on you. Like, oh, why are you picking on Chris Rock? But because Chris Rock took the slap so well, it negated all of the size differentiation that normally would happen.
It was the perfect use of force.
He didn't bleed at all. He's not hurt at all.
I can't believe how much I disagree with the both of you. Like to be in that forum and to not have some level of decorum to restrain yourself. You know what he could have done? Walked up there. My buddy, shout out to my buddy Nick, who always taught me this is an unbelievable move that will completely emasculate someone. You walk up, you grab him by the wrist and you say something into his ear. And that's going to sound like, oh, that's not as forceful. If he walked up.
You got a pretty little mouth. Got a real pretty little mouth
said,
hole.
Chris, knock it off right now. Don't say those things about my wife. And if you want to see another day, you'll apologize to her right now. And then sat
see,
down.
I feel
seat.
Like that's, you get Dave, Big Cat, every single influencer immediately. Hardo. If you're gonna talk about it, be about it.
Here's the other thing. I think like if it's in a bar and like somebody like physically assaults your wife, yeah, cool. Gloves are off. Go back at that dude. He made a joke, and yes, I understand it.
But
was
the Oscars technically is the bar, Cons. You can't forget that. They have all kinds of booze flowing.
True.
There's all
no,
kinds
the Oscars
of cans at whistlepig.com
no.
with
no,
the
that's
DVD
the Golden Globes.
That's the only thing that could have made this better. Friendly reminder, we had a Marine in my unit who passed out at his table at the Spike TV Awards and had to get his body physically dragged out in stress blues. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting at Jessica Biel's table. So
I had a boss that once had to be forcibly removed from the Super Bowl. So
yeah. Potato, potato. But the only slap that could have made this better, I think his use of force was perfect, would have been a backhand.
Yeah, let's take it from a military's perspective. Let's go up the continuum of force. The only thing, he was only on level two. Like, he's only a physical presence and verbal commands is level one. Second is putting your hands on somebody slightly. And we're not talking about big time strikes. We're talking about an overhand slap. I feel like that's the second level in the seven levels of the continuum of force, and he's fine.
And backhand is level three. He stopped right at two. The forward hand strike.
Pistol whip would have been too far.
Pistol whip would have been too far, but again, would have been extremely cool.
It would have been. I wish I would get pistol whip. I mean, I feel like saying that you survived a pistol whip might be better than you got shot. All right, let's move on to round number two. Round number two, we are going to talk about something completely different, but it's going to start with a little bit of acting too. I bet you, if whenever you press play this morning on, or whenever you're listening on ZBT, you would not have expected a Michelle Pfeiffer reference, but one's about to come, right, Kate?
Whoa. In 2013, Michelle Pfeiffer, the OG Catwoman who starred in Batman Returns alongside Michael Keaton, admitted to being part of a movement that believed humans cannot. Oh, pardon me. She believes that humans can exist without food or water. Mm-hmm. See, I read that wrong because you would
think so insane. Yeah,
the opposite. Mm-hmm. Wow. Joining the group when she reached Hollywood at the age of 20, Pfeiffer was convinced that the diet regime would keep her slim while simultaneously expanding her spiritual horizons. At first, she was persuaded to become vegetarian via fruitarianism, a diet that consists primarily of fruits. Besides my beets, that's me. I'm all fruits all the time. I think the only reason I eat beets is because I'm like, you need to mix a veggie in now and then. Anyways,
you know who's not a fruit guy?
Who?
Liver King.
Oh, yeah. Liver King doesn't eat fruit, of course. Too much sugar.
Probably too much natural sugar.
Slowly, the actress was conditioned to replace food and water with the sun and passive inhalation of cosmic micro dust from the air. Mm-hmm. Yes, you read that right. So this is like how a whale eats krill. Is how I imagine Michelle Pfeiffer walking through the earth.
And she actually makes the same noises.
Batman.
That's why she hasn't had a role in like 15 years.
Right, exactly. She's sucking in micro dust. You read that right. Visiting the group three times a week, Pfeiffer realized that the members gradually emptied her bank account with their constant demands for fees. At the time, the actress was helping her future husband, actor Peter Horton, with a film about the Moonies, members of a religious movement widely known as the Unification Church. I was helping him do research on this cult, and I realized I was in one, Pfeiffer said. Horton then helped the actress cut ties.
Wait a minute.
I've been eating air beads for 3 days straight. What the hell? That's air beads. That's what we call it.
You fooled? No, I just had a huge, huge bite of outside air. I am stuffed.
Yeah, I'm just full of air. Horton then helped the actress cut ties with the group, who claimed that she wouldn't be able to survive without them. Enter breatharianism, an American movement founded by Wiley Brooks in the early 80s, preaching a sun and dust diet that has now become a core trend in pro-anorexia communities. These pro-ana communities, I've fallen down some rabbit holes online. It's devastatingly sad, but it's wild. These women teach each other how to be the most extreme version of anorexic, and men that you can possibly be, giving each other tips and tricks. And the worse you are, the more you're praised in this group. It's insane.
That's
claiming
crazy.
Claiming to have fasted for 19 years, Brooks was first introduced to the public in 1980 by deadlifting 1,100 pounds on a variety show called That's Incredible, shortly after he'd been a New York-based sound engineer for Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin. Though the claims were unverified, Brooks appeared on Tom Snyder's The Tomorrow Show a year later to preach that absolutely anyone can live without nutrients, except for those from air and sunlight. All you need is air and sunlight. Breatharianism is a philosophy that believes the human body, when it's in perfect harmony with itself and nature, basically all you need is the air that you breathe, Brooks told Snyder. There's only one thing that keeps the human body alive, and that's breathing. The food that we take in is the same as any other thing we take into the body, as it becomes habit. In other words, eating is an acquired habit, just like alcohol or cigarettes. You don't really need it. So
I could see an entire group of Lance Corporals believe in this.
I've been wasting all this time feeding my baby when he would have been fine.
You really need is Monster and fucking dip. That's it.
It's Monster and dip. Brooks then went on to make questionable claims like how breatharian mothers don't need to feed their babies who are born with the ability to survive on air and sun. Mm-hmm. He also believed that those who pass away during hunger strikes are killed by their death wish, not from starvation. Just to be clear, if you try to live off air and light, you're going to die is right. The way that goes. Despite the detractors, however, Brooks gathered a huge number of followers and eventually set up an institute in California in 82. At the time, he advised against fasting, and followers were urged to clean their blood with 24 food items featuring a yellow vibration quality. This included grapefruit, eggs, chicken, fish, and rum raisin Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
I gotta say, yeah. I'm in. Like, that I'm sounds in. Like a great diet. I would eat that the shit out of that
pretty
diet.
Great. In 83, the leader was seen leaving a 7-Eleven with a Slurpee, a hot dog, and Twinkies. Trays of room service food, including chicken pot pie and biscuits, were found outside his hotel room in Vancouver. And slowly things started to fall apart. He was sneaking food in his sleep when everyone else in his group was starving. I have taught yoga for 15 years and I've been to India where people survive without eating. So I know that actually, no, we read the reports. They don't survive. It's called starvation.
Yeah. But there's some stuff that happens in India and the yoga communities that really will throw you for a loop. Like that one fellow who had his hand up in the air for like 20 years and it's all deformed and shit.
Right. When Brooks began losing followers, he responded with an accusation of his own. Against the woman who was starting to bring him down, I suppose. What is this, Leffler? I'm getting this all mixed up.
Yeah,
now.
This is him. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We were romantically involved. We broke up. Now she's out for revenge. What she says is a bunch of garbage, he claimed. I go into 7-Elevens all the time, but only to buy magazines. I go to restaurants and to health food stores because my friends eat. No one can prove I'm eating the food. Then came the McDonald's fiasco. Who among us has not had a McDonald's fiasco at some point?
I have a tattoo on my ribs.
Exactly.
That's a living fiasco. Real quick, let's say you're about to get yourself into a McDonald's fiasco. What is your order?
I would go. Is it, what time of day is it?
Let's say it's
3 a.m.
after midnight. Yeah. Between midnight and 3 a.m. and you've been out enjoying some libations.
Do I know I'm going to die or no?
Yes.
Let's just say you're going to live.
Yeah. Okay, you're pretty certain.
I'm pretty certain I'm going to die. Okay. Well, if I know I'm going to die, I'm going with an Egg McMuffin. I'm going with a double fillet of fish, the two patties of fish on one with ketchup instead of tartar sauce and probably a McRib.
Okay. That's a good order. I'm definitely doing, I love the McMuffin. I got to do a McMuffin. Got to do a hash brown. I'm mixing in a 10 piece nugget, probably just your good old fashioned Big Mac. And I'm washing it all down with the chocolate shake. Cause I love the shakes at McDonald's.
Oh, I love just the Coke or the Sprite.
And fries are a given, obviously.
Dollar menu McChicken, two of them, extra mayonnaise, and put it in the microwave for me, honey. I want my mayonnaise hot,
dripping.
Then extra lettuce on there. Then I want McFlurries with extra M&Ms and a hot fudge sundae on the side. McDonald's has the best dollar menu hot fudge sundaes. Spoiler alert. I want the box of the cookies, the soft little cookies. Okay. I'm going all out in the desserts.
When did mayonnaise. You get to the point where you started to embrace your sauciness?
Oh, I've always been a saucy lady. Probably in college, chicken, bacon ranch fries. And I would
from
cover
Wendy's?
Them. No, this place, Canyon Pizza at IUP. I know there's one at Penn State too. I would cover them in so much. I have a permanent scar on the inside of my finger. I was feeding one of my drunk friends a French fry once. She bit me so hard, she almost took my finger clear off.
On the inside?
So much ranch. Oh yeah.
Jesus Christ. You showed like almost at the webbing of your finger. Like, deep in her mouth.
I'll show you next time you come up. It almost lost blood everywhere. Blood and ranch. Goodness. Just blood and ranch. And then we still kept eating. Anyway, so the McDonald's fiasco. Brooks believed that humans aren't supposed to live in a third dimension reality. Instead, we're all fifth dimensional beings who were trapped on Earth, being sucked into the 3D world, which is why we feel the urge to eat 3D food. When the leader was caught easting McDonald's, he incorporated the American fast food giant into his philosophy, saying basically all McDonald's locations are built on properties protected by 5D energies and spiritual portals. This is why breatharians feel happier and at peace in a McDonald's. Say what? He then went on to recommend his followers drink as much Diet Coke and eat as many double quarter pounders as possible before they meditate, claiming that Diet Coke is liquid light. True. And cows are magical fifth dimensional converters who turn third dimensional food into fifth dimensional food. It's all starting to make sense.
That's tough to argue with.
It's hard to argue with. I'm kind of interested in trying it out. With the heavy focus on spirituality, Brooks basically evolved into urging his followers to either starve or eat fast food up until his death in 2016. Abandoning his classes, the leader then devoted 100% of his time to solve the problem as to why we need to eat some type of food to keep our physical body alive and light, blah, 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 blah.
I will say there is something to this, because when I was at Quantico, this was essentially my diet. I ate fast food or else I starved. And so did Kelsey. Yeah. And both of us are totally fine. So I feel like it worked. And I was probably in my peak physical condition at that point too. When I was only eating like Baconators and Taco Bell and McDonald's, only fast food. I couldn't afford anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was talking about the dance cult on here the other day, the 7M dance cult that's taking all the TikTok dancers right now and making them do real estate ads with their dance and stuff, and is taking all their money. It's crazy, but I can see how people fall in.
What is that? Have we talked about that? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, I've been following it so crazy close. So a couple of big time TikTok dancers started partnering up with and like falling into relationships with these guys who were from this church of the 7M. And the pillars of 7M, one of the pillars is that the way that they take over is through social media. And they're going after 1 billion followers. Once they hit 1 billion, God returns and the wrath, whatever. But if you're one of their 1 billion followers, then you're good, whatever. So it's run by this guy named David Shin and whatever. Anyways, a bunch of these TikTok dancers, people started saying the other week, hey, I haven't heard from my friend so-and-so in like a year. And somebody else was like, oh my God, I haven't heard from her either. Well, they all live at this house, which is like a hype house of sorts, except it's for this 7M church. And all their dances have changed. They dance now to like 70s and 80s wholesome music. And they've been forced to like intermarry. So they're like all marrying each other and stuff. And they do a lot of their dances at home. So they're
like polyamorous or something?
No, but they do a lot.
It's like a commune almost?
It's like a commune. They do almost all their dances at home. And it's actually illegal to do in California. So they're changing a lot of their old posts now, but at homes that the owner of the 7M cult has up for sale. He's a big real estate guy too. So, and basically they're doing car ads. A bunch of them are the halftime dancers for the Clippers. And people are starting to tweet at the Clippers like, hey, you guys have cult members dancing at your halftime show. Hey, Kia, you have cult members dancing in your ads on TikTok. Hey, and it turns out looking into it, like more and more, like it's really creepy. They have the women
that,
now.
Would you ever look into that? If somebody was like, hey, there's a bunch of cult members at Barstool, would you look into it? I don't think I would. Like, I think if I'm
I think somebody these, should.
Like, if you're at the Clippers organization, like these people, it's the premise is just so insane. That you the same thing with the McDonald's story with those folks. Like you hear these stories and you're like, there's no way any real person. But then the next thing you know, you have these rallies where people are thinking that fucking JFK Jr. is coming back.
Yeah, yeah. I will say it doesn't sound like these TikTokers are hurting anyone. If people were part of a group or a cult that had some nefarious actions ahead of them, you might want to get on that. Like, I don't know, did you guys ever know the story of back in the 80s that Apple hired skinheads for their 1984 ad? And obviously some people knew it, some people didn't, but there was some backlash, so you probably don't want Nazis. But if these TikTokers aren't hurting anybody,
fair statement, Kanz. You probably don't want Nazis.
No, well, so Apple didn't want them.
Yeah,
well, these dancers are being controlled by the head guy they're making money and he's taking their money. And then they're doing this TikTok thing, which is widely popular. So they're bringing in more young people. And these TikTokers' parents are making videos saying, where's my daughter? Where's my son? We don't have contact with them anymore.
Something, Kate?
Huh?
There's a slight part of me that's scared that you're going to fall into this group.
I for sure would love to join a cult that would get me healthy or something for a little bit. You know, I'd dabble.
Just your beach season, maybe?
All of these people, the TikTok group that you're talking about, reminds me of the new season of Righteous Gemstones with the God Squad.
Yeah.
Like that whole group just out there dancing and getting along. Don't join a cult, folks. That's basically what
to
say.
Yeah.
So I would say that if this woman was trying to be a leader, you can't do it this way. You can't have your folks. Your group is just going to be so weak if everybody's only relying on solar dust and fucking air. You're not going to get enough out of that.
Does part of you think, I know you want to move on. Just real quick question. Like, obviously these people are wacky and they have some screws loose, but does part of you think like the fact that they're able to believe this crazy stuff and seemingly be happy and unaffected by the outside world, I guess there's a small part that that's nice for them, I guess. Maybe a little, no?
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, let's move on to round number three. What do we got there, Kate?
Round number three. And first of all, back to round number two real quick. Lest we forget, the military is a cult, really.
I don't think so.
We got our own wacky way of living. We do parties over at the officers' housing.
Take a very, very literal interpretation of cults, I guess. Maybe crossover.
We all dress the same.
Maybe we should start looking inward.
We're drinking grog.
Yeah. Oh, great. Now Kate's going to start sticking up for the Russians. We've
got wacky tattoos.
We've reached that point in the show where Kate's like, oh, the military stinks. We got to go. The Russians are the fucking best.
Oh, I'm saying it's a great cult. I'm saying it's one I enjoyed.
Let's move on to round number three.
Round number three. Okay. So this one, chaps, how did you stumble upon this?
Well, I have to admit, Kate.
Go on.
The other day, I was doing a little three chi goofing.
And I knew you were.
You happened to tweet a picture of a bird. I believe it was like a swallow or something like that from one of the many bird counts that you followed.
Yes.
I looked at it, went to a couple other different bird sites because I was looking at birds that were smiling because it was making me laugh. And then the next thing I know, I see this headline. And I thought, this is something our Katie would let happen. Katie would definitely let birds nest in her hair for 84 days.
Okay. Probably.
Because it would be rude to ask them to leave.
That's very true. She would apologize to them.
Once something nests, you have to let it complete. Like if they're
You don't.
No, completely agree with Kate. In my shed, I left because I have like speakers in my shed where that's the speakers for the pool. Like so it's controlled in there and doesn't get all messed up. I left the window open and over like 2 or 3 days. And then when I went in to the shed to go get something, I noticed there was a full out bird's nest in there. And I was like, I'm not even sure if I can close the window now, because what if there's eggs in there and the mom or dad needs to get back to feed this baby? I can't do that.
Exactly. Once there's an egg involved, you can't stop. Whatever.
And another time at my old house, there was this big entryway and there was a big bird's nest and the birds were just constantly shitting. And it was like right when you walk into my front door, you don't want to have just acres of bird shit all over the place. So I knocked it down. And when I knocked it down, there was little eggs on the inside, like robin eggs. And I felt so terrible.
You should feel terrible.
Never again.
Jesus. Speaking of, we got someone named Robin in this story. So this is the first person account for this woman. In 2013, my husband Robin took a job in Ghana. We relocated from London, where I worked as a photographer and copywriter, to the capital, Accra. We then moved to the grasslands, where guinea grass swayed 11 feet tall.
I love this. Hold on. This is from like one of those tabloids in fucking England.
The Sun, UK.
Yeah, like one of those. Like the Daily Mail, I think, actually.
Yep, the Daily Mail. Perfect. Home was a thatched bungalow beside the Volta River. I had loved nature since childhood, and when my dad taught me about birds and animals, I photographed horses professionally and considered the outdoors the place where I felt most alive. So when we arrived on the plains, I felt relief. Robin worked, but my visa didn't permit me to. What a treat. And I left isolated, homesick, and lacking purpose. Come on. With a few people around our home, I turned to nature. I learned the routines of local birds, the weavers that flew from kapok trees, trailing fronds like streamers, and a pair of violet turricos that roost every dusk.
What the fuck is this bitch doing?
Sure.
What is this?
This lady bizarre.
Honestly, like, this would be me for sure.
This is essentially poor Gwyneth Paltrow trying to start her own goop company.
Yes.
Yes. That's accurate.
In September 2018, I had just a year to live and enjoy Africa. Oh no, I was so sad. In September 2018, the rainy season was in full flow. After one particularly bad thunderstorm, I found a fledgling, a bronze-winged mannequin finch, barely a month old, on the ground.
How did you age this thing?
I have no idea. He was abandoned by his flock, his nest blown from the mango tree. His eyes were tightly shut and he was shuddering, too young to survive alone. He was the size of my little finger, with feathers the color of rich tea biscuits, inky eyes, and a small bill like pencil lead. I placed
him
in a
screwing with me. Is this for real?
I swear to God, this is it.
I placed him in a cardboard box mimicking a nest, stayed up all night researching how to care for him. I spoke to an expert who said it would take 12 weeks to prepare him for the wild.
But honestly, this is something Kate would text us at like 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday of things that
I have
happen
a bird here. And I, well, remind me, I got a story.
Hey guys, I'm going to be late. I got to fucking take care of this bird. It's the speckled finch. You know, I saw it. Mm-hmm. Next thing I know, it's got a pencil lead mouth and I had to adopt it and take care of it forever.
I once accidentally hit a squirrel on my bicycle. It was already wounded. And I re-ran it over on my bike as a kid going down a grass hill. Let me tell you, I put it in my neighbor's baseball cap and rode this thing all the way home to my dad. I was like, freak it out. It was the worst. Anyway.
What did he do when you brought that there? Say, what are you going to do with this? Was it still alive? Was it
my childhood memory? A group of the dads were having beers hanging out. And I believe the squirrel was beyond repair. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want to say what happens next.
Thrown on the bonfire?
No. In my memory, I could be wrong. Form.
Okay.
He's tied in like a plastic Wawa bag to the tailpipe of our minivan.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And just the whole squad's fucking hanging out. Meanwhile, Chip and Dale are just hanging out on the tailpipe.
That can't be true.
Just wondering how their fate is going to lead them. It's like that one scene where it's like first time that that's how the squirrel is.
This can't be. Well, Carvin, they turned the car on. It was a peaceful death.
You trying to smoke them out?
Jesus Christ, Joe.
Oh my God, Mr. Mannion, what is going
he's
on?
He's going to call me and be like, we took it to the vet. What are you thinking about? In my childhood memory, that's...
No, I see it. He can say that, but I see the pain deep inside your eyes. That's I'm sorry for even bringing this up. What a terrible memory. Seriously. My goodness gracious.
There's no way that really happened.
It might have.
I have tears in my eyes.
No, that
why
was
would I
repressed
make that
and it came out right yeah. there.
This is seriously no, acting I'm, as a therapy session for you.
I'm pretty sure we went to the vet.
We're going to have to get Joe on the podcast to get to the bottom of this.
And then the vet wasn't there, and maybe that's why it happened. Maybe it didn't happen.
So what, they tied him on the tailpipe to bring him home?
How would you possibly misconstrue tying it up in a Wawa bag and putting it on your fucking tailpipe? It's not like that. That's not like you put it in a basket and left it out for like we're having a picnic. You remember, was there another time that there was a plastic bag filled with squirrels that was tied
was
to your dad's
to tie tailpipe? Wounded animals
no,
to the
I'm
tailpipe?
Sweating. Can I say what maybe one of the dads threw it out as an idea that I overheard and it was so jarring it stuck in my head that like, oh, of course not. But now my child, you know how memories change. Now in my head it's like,
hold on, let me see. I got his number. Let me see if I could call him.
He's going to be like, what? No, that never happened.
I need to know what else was happening with wild animals in your neighborhood.
I'm afraid to hear now.
Chaps, I think, is calling. We're going to get to the bottom of this one way or another. Yeah. One way or another. We're gonna find it out now
is
or we'll find
phone?
It out another time.
I think I got it. Hold on.
This is fantastic.
He's going to be like, no, that never happened.
Yeah, I don't know. All right,
what a
found
crazy
it. Here we
thing.
Go.
Here we go.
But why the crazy thing to have in my mind? I'm so afraid.
Let's see if she answered.
He might have indoor golf league today.
Could, yeah.
Oh,
brutal.
Shameful. Brutal. He's like, thank God.
Yeah, next week. We'll try to do it next week.
Anyway, back to this woman and her birds. Tune in next week to find out if Kate's dad tied a squirrel to a
Welcome
minivan.
Back to Dead Squirrel Radio with Kate's dad as a co-host.
I mean, whatever. Anyways, the next day, the little bird woke up with his mouth open and a shrill hunger call. I fed him termites and instinctively chirped at him. He chirped back and clambered into my hand, digging his beak, head, and fell asleep in my palm. Sure, honey. As far as he was concerned, I was his mother. For the next 84 days, the fledgling lived on me. We became inseparable. He would fly alongside me, cling to me room to room, walk with me in the grasslands, came with me when I drove. He'd rest in my hand. As he learned to fly, he'd make short flights from my hand to my shoulder, to my head, and then down to my waist-length hair to rest again. He investigated my clothes, belt, and shoelaces. I ate and went to the toilet one-handed as he took daily naps in my cupped palm.
Just taking a growler with this fish in my hand.
Sing me a song. Daddy's got to make it move.
At dusk, I would stroke and chirp to him.
You sure do have a pretty mouth, you little whippoorwill.
And his head lolled to one side. Then I'd lower him into his tea towel and leave him till dawn. Each day he made little nests in my hair on the groove of my collarbone, which filled me with awe. He'd tuck himself under a curtain of hair and gather individual strands of his beak, sculpting them into a row of woven locks resembling a small nest.
That's essentially enough. We've gotten the gist of the story. But honest to God, that article from the Daily Mail, and she wrote it in first person narrative, beautiful. It's beautiful, right? Like the imagery that he absolutes down to my waistline and is hanging out. Come on, that's beautiful. Hemingway.
Fantastic prose.
Yeah.
Last year, when we returned to Oxfordshire, I joined local conservation efforts and wrote a story into a book, Fledgling, that along with the lesson from the tiny animal can make a difference, will be his legacy.
Did this woman grow up, move to New York City, live in Carnegie Hall, and save a 10-year-old from two thieves on Christmas Eve one year?
Could. I honest to God believe that this would be a perfect single Kate, 55 years old, with no kids. That's your life. 1,000%.
Absolutely. I can absolutely see me put all my time and energy into a bird. For sure.
If you retired early and you decided that you want to move, we didn't hear from you for 10 years and you were like, hey Chas, we haven't talked in 10 years, like, what are you getting into, Kate? Well, after things went down with Barstool and I left, I actually moved into a yurt in Kansas, and it's wonderful out here.
Yeah, I got four peacocks living in the yurt with me, and we make candles together.
Candle peacocks, love that.
No squirrels though. That's such a bizarre that. I need to know. It's really going to bother me. Did my dad kill a squirrel in a bag attached to a minivan?
He must be doing golf because he hasn't called back. Hopefully he calls back by the end of the show.
It's very upsetting.
But he might not have my number safe. So if it's coming from a random Florida number, he's probably like, I don't know.
Send a follow-up text. Hey, urgent. Joe, this is Chaps.
Good.
Please call back.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to round number four. While I text Kate's dad, we'll start talking about Ukraine. Yeah.
Sure I probably overheard someone joke about doing that. And in my mind, that my childhood mind, that became what happened. I don't know. This is going to bother me all day. Round number four, much more serious tone. Since its invasion of Ukraine began, the Russian military.
Wait, before you start really going, we just have to let the listener know, even though we're going to talk about something serious, I'm texting Kate's dad. If he calls, we're going to have to interrupt no matter what round we're in, no matter where we're at to deal with Squirrelgate.
That's true. Round number four, since its invasion of Ukraine began, the Russian military has been largely stalled around the country, facing no shortage of challenges, from lack of fuel, food, and morale to fierce resistance by Ukrainian forces. The invasion, it seems, wasn't properly planned and resourced, one senior defense official told reporters earlier this month, and the lack of planning has delivered one blow after another to the Russian narrative that it's an indestructible military force. There are plenty of reasons to explain how the Russian military has fared so poorly in Ukraine, but one of the biggest could be its lack of enlisted leadership. And what Russia lacks in rank and file leaders, the U.S. military has in spades due to its NCOs. Hey, sergeants are the backbone of the Corps, am I right?
Now, did you ever, Kate, I want to ask you, because cons, this doesn't really apply to you. That line, NCOs and sergeants specifically are the backbone of the Marine Corps, has been a statement that you hear from boot camp, like whenever you get to the fleet, trust your NCOs. And in fact, it's almost never. I mean, thinking back now, I don't know if I've ever thought about it. You never hear that about your officers, like positive thought about your officers. Did you ever hear that, Kate? even from the officers, it was trust your NCOs, listen to
your NCOs. Yeah, and the Army too. NCOs are the backbone of the Army. That's what you always hear.
So like you have this, and I joined a little bit later. I was 22, 23 and had done some college and things like that. So when I heard that, I always used to think from the beginning stages, this is just them fucking like pumping us up for whatever reason they're doing it. I'm not sure if they actually believe it. Now with this information coming out and having more experience and more time under my belt, it is unequivocally true that the NCOs are the difference makers. The NCOs and staff NCOs are the difference makers in combat, period, period.
How I picture it is ultimately the lowest of the low enlisted are the ones who are the boots on the ground doing whatever great plans from those up above. Mm-hmm. You can do nothing without them. And the direct strings, the ones, the puppet masters, are the corporals and the NCOs. Mm. Everybody can tell those corporals and NCOs what to do with the strings, what to whatever, but they're the ones who actually can make them move better than anybody else. They know them better than anybody else. They know, yeah, I just feel like, yeah.
Because I texted Cons to see if he agreed from an officer's perspective. And I said, I want to see if you agree with this. And I'll pose it just the same now. Do you believe that you can have the best officer in the world? Like you can essentially have Chesty Puller come and lead your platoon. If you have shitty NCOs, that platoon will do poorly. Or that company will do poorly if there's no good NCOs, even with Chesty at the helm. Conversely, you could have a bad officer that's paired with good NCOs and the mission is going to be okay once you actually kick it off, provided that the mission makes sense, like that the officer has given you. Cons, do you agree with that?
1,000%. A company, a troop, a platoon can overcome a bad leader, can overcome a bad officer if you have those strong NCOs. If you don't have NCOs, you're going to be so screwed. You cannot operate without strong NCOs for a lot of the reasons that you guys already mentioned. The officer's job, you know, strategizing, planning, giving orders. And don't get me wrong. It's still important to have a, you know, it's very helpful to have a good leader leading from the front and mm-hmm. setting that good example. But all of the other things, did the soldiers eat? Are the soldiers properly clothed? Do the soldiers have shelter? Do they know what their mission is? That is all the responsibility of the NCOs. And you got to think about it too, just from a numbers standpoint. Let's take a platoon as an example. There's one officer. There's how many NCOs? There's at least four squad leaders within there. You have team leaders. You have all these other levels to ensure that the soldiers are taken care of, and Marines, whatever branch that mm-hmm. we're talking about here. And I mean, I think a great example that I think would resonate with a lot of our listeners who might not have been in the military, look at Band of Brothers, the series that everybody has seen. They were able to operate and still succeed and do well because of all those amazing NCOs that they had throughout Easy Company. They had obviously Winters, who was a great officer. When they lost him to battalion, they went through a whole bunch of different officers who were good, bad, whatever, but they stayed strong. And even, I think it was episode 9, when Spears takes over the company, he said, there's always been one man that they've been able to look to. And that was for Sergeant Lipton, one of the NCOs, the top NCO. And he was the person who kept that company altogether. So it goes without saying that if you don't have NCOs, you're going to fail. And it's just not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
And from a non-military perspective, a non-Band of Brothers, Urban Meyer, I think, is probably the best example ever.
Bingo.
Of that, like in sports, because he is an awful leader, an awful person, X's and O's coaching wise, not great at it, but he is very good at recruiting. Like, and he's good at hiring people that were good at it, like Ryan Day and Tom Herman and those types of coordinators who are actually going to do things. And then having unbelievably talented players, like players that know the game, players that are extremely high quality athletes that can go out there and perform well. That's essentially what you have. Like it doesn't matter. Urban Meyer can't go to the NFL and coach because he can't fucking coach. You can rely on good players and five stars at Ohio State. You can't do that in the military.
You know, it's another good example, keeping with the football analogy. Look at Nick Saban's coaching tree and how successful so many of his position coaches have been. But what were they first? They were position coaches. And that's part of the reason Alabama has been as successful as they have been, because they've always had unbelievable position coaches. And I mean, a lot of that is attributed to Saban's leadership. But that's part of the reason.
Might be Alabama's... the antithesis of that example too. You have somebody who's just so good at what they do and putting in a program and putting everything together. He might be the chesty that can overcome a bunch of shitty because he has like Bill O'Brien and all those guys.
Yeah. The other thing I'll say, like from my own experience, going into combat the first time, I didn't have any experience, but you know who did have experience? My 16-year, sergeant first class, platoon sergeant, blanking there. He had experience that I could lean on that I couldn't learn in a book. I couldn't learn in training.
So yeah, they're the experts.
All these guys who was like, all right, cool. Like, I know that like what we're supposed to do, but like, how does it really happen? And you can ask them real world experience that you can't get from a book or from training. And
yeah, you have the Mike Tyson adage of everybody has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. It's the same thing in combat. Everybody has a plan until there's a mortar that drops on your position.
Everybody has an alopecia joke till you get slapped in the face.
Exactly right. All right, Kate, continue with the NCO trip down this article.
Yeah, so the Russian military does not operate that way. They don't organize their military the way we do, a senior U.S. defense official told reporters this week. They do not have an equivalent to an NCO, for instance, and their junior officers don't have the same wherewithal flexibility. You've all covered our wars for the last 20 years. You know that we put a lot into an E4 and an E5 and an E6 to make decisions literally in the moment on the battlefield. They don't have that kind of tradition. They don't have that structure. The Russian military relies heavily on conscripts, men between the ages of 18 to 27 who are drafted into service.
And let me just say, when I first read that they don't have that, I'm not some military tactician. I never claimed to be. I don't know a whole lot. Like if you were like, oh, what formation should I would have no idea whatsoever. I do know reading that paragraph, that's the wrong way to do it. Like it's not going to work. You're going to have this result that they're having right now.
Yeah. According to the Institute for the Study of War, the annual conscription pool of men in Russia is around 1.2 million people, though only about half actually even show up. Those conscripts receive roughly 2 months of basic training and then 3 to 6 months of advanced training, the Institute for the Study said. They typically serve just a year. The conscription model has no real career path for troops, the article says. So NCOs either leave the service or become commissioned officers.
And that line there was back in the day, I don't know if you remember this, Kate. I think this was after your time, but the Marine Corps, because they needed so many people, right after 2003 and 2004, when both of the wars were going on, they needed to get more people in uniform. So they started doing 2-year contracts of active duty with 6 years reserve time. Did you see those types of contracts?
I didn't because I got tricked immediately into a 5-year.
So you have like these types of contracts that were a thing at the time. But so many people at like MOS schools and places like that were like, this is pointless. Like for somebody like me, a dog handler, for example, you go to boot camp, then MCT, then you go to MP school, and then you go to dog training school. By the time you're done with all those, you've been in for a year. So then you only have a year to actually do your job. So you have to go to your base, do a pre-deployment, you do one deployment, and then you're essentially done. So the military is putting in all this time and money and effort into training you, and you're only around for a year. That's what Russia's doing all the time. Of course they're going to be shitty.
And with way less training and with people who don't want to be there at all. At least ours is volunteer. So in turn, officers perform duties that would normally be performed by NCOs in Western armies. So they're doing the Charlie work. That responsibility has remained. Lieutenants in the Russian military today fill the roles of both a platoon leader and platoon sergeant in the U.S. military. The system is a huge part of why the Russian military has struggled in Ukraine, according to Lieutenant General Mark Hertling. They don't have a chain of command to help get information or orders out, and have to go to each individual soldier. And the NCO they may have are either appointed or elected, Hertling said, and likely have no training in what their responsibilities should be. This would make for a great episode of The Office, am I right? An office style show where nobody knows what the junior officers who are not well-versed, just like in our army, are experiencing combat for the first time. And instead of being able to turn to their platoon sergeant who runs their team, they've got to do it all themselves.
Which is what Khan's just said.
Yeah.
Right. Without NCOs, officers in a unit are responsible for every detail, no matter how small or mundane. So Khan's, picture that. Picture yourself back in Iraq, but with no NCOs, and you are dealing directly.
Well, because like the staff, like the junior staff NCO and the NCO's role, typically whenever the commander, the platoon commander, the company commander would come out, you have everything ready to go. everybody's already done their guard mounts. Everybody's already done their formations to make sure everybody has their gear, that it's on right, that it's worn correctly, that they've done all of the training that they need to have, that they have their water, they have their MREs, that they have everything. And then when the officer comes out, all you have to do is give them a thumbs up. We're good. We're up. Let's go. And then when the officer trusts the NCO or the staff NCO in that, it changes the entire dynamic of what you can do. Once the officer can just deal with battalion and deal with the sergeant major and deal with the colonel or the XO or whoever and get what the actual mission is, that then the small unit commander can come out and imply intent to what the NCO and staff NCO has already prepared the platoon to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say, while NCOs are critical every day in a tank platoon, for example, the platoon sergeant knows everything there is to know the tank and how to operate it. They're especially important in combat. Without my NCOs, it's impossible for me to be able to effectively lead my team. Medal of Honor recipient Flo Groberg, former guest of the show, told Task and Purpose. I wouldn't have the right guidance. I wouldn't have the right expertise and leadership on the team to be able to motivate, track, and really do the impossible for our soldiers. They're the connective tissue to the mission. That's a great way to put it. Mm-hmm. Asked if the U.S. military could operate without NCOs, Groberg said, hard no. No, not a chance. Absolutely not. Am I still here?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. Oh, I got a note saying, a combat mission will never be successful without trained and educated NCOs, said retired Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps Alfred L. McMichael, who also served as a first half NCO for Allied Command Operations at NATO. Basically, it's a lot of, which is great to hear, it's a lot of everybody giving much love to the NCOs. I can't imagine the Russian military without it. I can't. Also, this is kind of a side note, but have you seen a lot of the upper tier Defense Department in Russia are like starting to disappear as things are going bad?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like nobody's seen from the head of their Defense Department in like 2 weeks. And they think that a video that was put in of him is like an old record. I don't know. I'm putting the tinfoil hat on. I believe it. They're disappearing.
Okay. Do you remember the Marine Corps ditty for Sergeant Major McMichael at boot camp?
No.
First black Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps.
Oh, this is what we had to yell outside the chow hall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Way City, house to house. Yeah, that was one of those. Okay. Yeah. Yep. See, that's the only one I remember.
Yeah, I think just think overall, also, it's go ahead, Cons.
I was just going to say it would be such a stressful existence if you didn't have NCOs that were squared away and taking care of everything. It would just make you absolutely nuts and then in turn not allow you to do your job effectively.
But I ultimately think that this is a great lesson because it really shows us the reason why they are struggling. Like this to me, that this is the best example. They don't have logistics, they don't have all the things that they need because they don't have a good NCO corps. Like that's the reason why. Bombs, bullets, and band-aids are the responsibility of enlisted leaders here. Like that's just what you're supposed to do. Like how many fucking rounds did you expend? How many do you need? Is your magazines good? Are you up and down on water? Where are we at? Up and down all the way. That's NCO business.
Yeah. And one other thing I'll say about too, like I think back to being a platoon leader, there's 33 guys in my platoon, including everybody. Now I had a relationship with all 33, but from a sheer numbers and time perspective, I can't like, well, one, it's just not professional to have like a super close relationship with each person within your platoon, because that's just improper for that divide to be overstepped. But when it comes to like morale and like really seeing somebody for what's going on with them, you need those NCOs to keep that eye on them, to make sure that their head is squared on straight and to make sure that they're not dealing with anything else that might affect how they are able to complete the mission. So,
and I think what you're saying there is incredibly important, because the morale aspect only comes through trust, and that trust is gained on the NCO ranks through experience and through fairness and how you deal with people, whether in good situations and in bad. That's another reason why the Russians are failing. I came across this thread from a dude named Sergey Somleny, and he works in Eastern, he's an Eastern Europe expert on foreign policy and is a director of one of the offshoots of a NATO program that he has as well. And this is an incredible thread. I'll just go through it. He said, in many tap phone calls between Russian soldiers and their relatives, they all tell the same story, how rich Ukraine is, how much they have looted, and how cool people are who live there. Some people saw asphalt and streets for the first time, or streetlights for the first time in their lives. Many Western experts, politicians love to repeat the story of, quote, rich Russia and poor Ukraine. The fact is, except for the extra rich in Moscow and in Petersburg, Russia is an underdeveloped country and the average Ukrainian province lives much better than the average Russian province. I don't talk about political freedoms in Ukraine, like the election of mayors and free press and self-governance and all that, but I do want to say that they had no idea how well off Ukraine was because they were lied to. And he goes into some specifics. For example, people in Russia are constantly told how much better they are than Russia and how much better their Russian citizens are. Well, the average person in Russia makes $190 in 2021, while the minimum wage in Ukraine was $245. The average wage in Russia was $688, while the average in Ukraine is $640. But that last part needs to be contextualized because so many people in Russia are billionaires. Like the billionaires are the ones that make that go up.
Yeah, they skew those numbers.
Everything they've been told, like they're not coming across a bunch of Nazis. They're not coming upon a bunch of people who are Russian speakers who want to go back to Russia like they've been told. Trust and confidence in having truthful information is so incredibly important. And I feel like that lesson is going to be the lesson learned for, I think, our military is like trust, like having the ability to believe what your leaders are saying is so invaluable when you're talking about the human element of war. It's just so invaluable.
I'm thinking too, I keep tying things back to, I think that's what we do as humans, to our own experience. And like, I went to Afghanistan. By the time I went and I was there and boots on the ground, I didn't quite, like a lot of us in the smoke pit and be like, what is the main reason we're here now at this point? Like what, like clearly what we're doing is not working, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't the higher ups that kept us motivated. We weren't clear on the mission, but it was the NCOs. We just wanted to do a good job for our NCOs. And that was the crux of it. Like it didn't even matter why we were there, or what we were doing. Like Russia, these guys might be getting there now and being like, what are we doing? What? But they don't have the NCOs to be like, whatever, we're sticking as a team and doing this together. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of a fucked up, weird freezing. My brain's a pretzel.
No, I think that it's,
if that makes any sense.
I think having that same, like, it's very clear that everybody that went to Afghanistan or Iraq and like at the end of it, you're like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, what are we accomplishing? Like my friends are getting injured and dying for no reason. We're seeing civilians hurt and injured and dying for no reason. Like, we don't want to be a part of that. Russia, I feel like, is doing the same thing, but to a
way
whole
worse.
Another level.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even comparable, but I'm saying like, this is dumb. I'm not even comparing them and it's going to sound like I am. I'm just saying two different militaries who at the lowest level might be a little confused about the reasons for whatever they're doing. The difference was we had amazing leadership. I think that,
Russia is devoid of camaraderie that was very abundant in
yes.
your unit.
Not, please, oh God, I'm not comparing.
Well, you can't have it if everybody gets in and out in under a year. There's no way you have any type of like squad cohesion or anything like that. I mean, because when somebody's new in your platoon, they feel new for a while. But after a while, you begin to trust them. And I think, Kate, what you're doing is exactly human nature. It's impossible to compartmentalize and to compare something without being able to have something to make a direct comparison to. I mean, that's the only way we can understand the plight of other humans is putting ourselves or attempting to put ourselves in the closest simulation that they are experiencing.
Let me make this about me and then explain it to you is my best way of doing things.
I think you could do that a lot better than you could jump inside the brain of a Ukrainian, a place that you've never been, a culture that you don't know.
Yeah.
I think that it is like, it's very human nature to look at that. And that's why those stories that are coming out from Russia are so gut-wrenching because you can, I mean, as somebody who's gone to places that you don't really know why you're there, you don't really know why you're fighting. Looking back at the Russians that are doing that are just being conscripted and probably terrified that they're going to get their equivalent of fucking court-martialed if they show. I mean, I imagine the punishment for being called by Putin and getting an order to show up for Russia and just being like, no thanks. I guess they take that lightly.
Yeah,
probably not. Chaps, it's funny though. You mentioned something that stirred a memory for me. When you're new and you feel new, first day I got to my platoon, it was the end of the day. I was down in the motor pool. I asked my platoon sergeant, like, oh, okay, like, do you think I can address the platoon just to introduce myself? I'd love to hear from one of those guys, one of my soldiers, what they were thinking.
First impression. When this
first lieutenant standing in front of them. And I didn't think I was going to give any sort of like, you know, like prior to D-Day type speech. I just really wanted to introduce myself, but they're all probably thinking, who's this new loser?
Lugo used to always say no. my favorite thing about Lugo when Captain Tomasic would, when we would inevitably get like a new first lieutenant or second lieutenant, like we'd have like a company formation and everybody would go out there and Lugo would be where the first sergeant is. And the captain would be like, we got two new officers here. This one's from this place. You guys want to address the company? And first sergeant Lugo would chime in. They're all good, sir. Let's just keep it moving. I fucking just love
rolling it along.
Yeah, like, we don't need to hear from those fucking boots. We'll just keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
The best.
All right, that's such a challenge as a new lieutenant, because you want to like assert your leadership, but also not step on their toes. I don't know. It's a whole.
Oh, that's a tough. That's a hard job. That's why I went enlisted.
And being, I mean, it's tough being any like higher rank, even like staff NCOs, like showing up because you want. There's always this adage of whenever you're new, you got to be hard as shit. Like when you go into a new place, like, oh God, we're going to have uniform inspections. He's going to try to, he or she's going to try to kill us on a run or mm-hmm. whatever. And it just, everybody just knows it's essentially a game.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center. Thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Let's move on to save rounds and alibis. Nicholas, no, we got round five, as you were.
It's going to be quick. I know this is a longer show. It's going to be quick. This is just a classic Florida man tale that I felt needed to be told. So a contractor working at the Navy SEAL Museum was arrested last week for trying to steal, allegedly, a ballistic vest that was worn by a member of the SEAL team that took out Osama bin Laden. Mm. The cops alleged that Kendall Rust, his last name was Rust, age 30, was working inside the museum in Fort Pierce, Florida, when an employee noticed he was acting suspiciously. When Rust later packed up his tools and began to leave, the female employee told cops that she noticed a Navy SEAL ballistic article was missing from the room Rust was in. Apprised of the item's appearance, a museum official confronted Rust, who reportedly copped to swiping the vest because he just wanted to take a picture of it. A museum official estimated the vest was worth $50,000 since it was part of the uniform of a Navy SEAL during the Bin Laden raid. I didn't know that there was monetary value on stuff like that. Like a baseball that was hit during the World Series is worth a lot more. And holy shit, a vest worn by a nail.
Yeah, yes. I mean, go on YouTube or go on eBay and try to check out World War II items. Those shits are expensive.
Like, I mean, $50,000.
I didn't know there was a market for World War II memorabilia.
If you have that in a couple years, like 20 years, and you're like, this is worn on the Osama bin Laden raid, I would imagine there's lots of military collectors that would pay a pretty penny for that stuff.
Now, say I'm on the Bin Laden raid, mm-hmm. Navy SEAL. I have the vest. Do they make you turn that shit in, right? When you get out of the military, like they even the hardos have to go through, not hardos, but even the badasses have to go through SIF, right?
I mean, it's not like, I really doubt SEALs are looking at their inventory for like fucking vests and stuff. They're replaced so often.
But I'm saying,
I doubt that it would be something.
They're probably really also using stuff that's not issued. No, but they're probably using stuff that isn't issued. Standard.
Oh, good. So you use it. Good stuff. I'm just saying, how pissed would you be if you turn your vest into SIF and the next thing you know, it's in a museum and it's worth 50 grand. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. And there definitely is rules about certain combat stuff that you can't take it.
Really?
Yeah. For instance, they
like you can't sell your own stuff.
And a lot of it will get like, if they know that it's been involved in combat operations, like the order from at least in Al Anbar province, everything that I was wearing the day that I got shot had to be put in an incinerator. Everything.
What?
Like if you had military, like if it got blood on it or anything like that, they were immediately taking it and burning it.
Wow. Because
they didn't
know
want
that.
It to be used in propaganda.
Well, anyway, this guy tried. He had gotten it out. So he wanted to take a photo of it outside, he said. And when he got caught by the cops, he cried. And last I checked, he was in jail on a $10,000 bond. So poor Rust.
And I was very upset that I lost my shoes because they like what my shoes had a little bit of blood on them, and they had to get rid of them. They were like, I think my mom actually sent them to me. They were just like Merrell hiking boots. Like they weren't even military issue boots, but because of the places that we were going in Fallujah, had so many like canals up and down.
You got to get a pair of Rocky boots, my friend.
Should have had those. That would have been good. All right, let's move on with save rounds and alibis. Nick, we'll start with you. What do you got, pal?
A quick save round for me. So Cons, earlier in the show, you said about how I would know like a sell job because of pro wrestling. Well, I still think pro wrestling's real. So I just wanted to clarify that. So I have no idea what you're talking about. And please subscribe to the YouTube. Thank you.
All right. Cons?
We failed to mention Madeleine Albright passed away, first female Secretary of State. And what's interesting about her is she was the Secretary of State when I was in that part of grammar school, middle school, whatever, when you're really paying attention to that sort of thing going on in the world, like current events. That was, I think, the first age, like fifth, sixth grade, where you start really paying attention to current events. At least it was for me. So I just remember her name being mentioned all the time. So RIP to her. And then also, did you guys see that Donnie and John Kelly on our production team, they were just in Iraq?
Yeah, yes. They actually reached out to me for some advice.
That was Donnie bananas. Yeah.
And it looks like Donnie had, it looks like they had an amazing time. So
I doubt it. The people of Iraq are fantastic. Like the things that he was doing there and eating like the naan bread or like whatever the equivalent to their naan bread was, like unbelievable. And the haircuts, like Donnie's going nutso butso on Twitter about the haircut. The best haircut I ever had in my life. Happened in Iraq.
Yeah, I think people forget that that culture in general is a very welcoming, hospitable culture, and it they all get a bad rap because of everything that has
because we did some war with them for a while.
But it's unbelievably hospitable culture, so it doesn't surprise me to hear that they had a nice time.
Yeah, very cool.
That's all I got.
Me, I got a war story for you. Okay,
send it.
Yesterday morning, I get up bright and early with the baby. He's eating human foods now. I say, I'm going to make some pancakes for the squad. Nice. I hadn't made pancakes in a little while. And like, no, I am a bit of a mess, but I'm pretty clean when it comes to cleanliness, especially since the baby's been around. Sure. I keep the kitchen clean. I clean it every, whatever. I go to open the Bisquick that I haven't opened in a hot minute. And I squint at the bag. And I say, what are these little black dots? What the fuck is this? Are these ants? Oh God, I look closer, not ants. It looked like, when I say hundreds upon hundreds in this small bag of roaches, they looked like tiny size of a pinhead roaches, size of a pinhead. I dropped the box.
That's worse. I thought it was going to be, I thought it was going to be mouse poop.
I thought it
was
mouse poop.
Little roaches is worse.
I thought it was mouse poop.
Yeah, mouse poop.
Little tiny, come out of the box that I had been touching. They're on my hands. I scream. I'm screaming. I wash, and I don't do bugs. I don't do fucking bugs. Put a snake around my leg, like, whatever. I don't do fucking bugs. I freak the fuck out. I then put it, the bag and everything within 15 different bags. I Google it. There are weevils. And then I heard it's very common. And we take apart then the entire kitchen. We're checking for them and everything else. I hadn't seen them.
That's the worst part. When, as like the husband, when you see a bug, you know you're all day shop. Like you're going through everything.
Literally every item in our cabinet got opened up. And guess where else they were? Any flour, anything with flour in it.
So like baby formula?
Is what? No, thank God. Because those are sealed, super sealed. But seal, anything that was in a bag, like all my baking supplies, fucked. This is,
I'm shocked that you have a bunch of baking supplies.
Listen to this. I used to love baking. So I Google it thinking, how did the hell did these weevils get into my apartment? Like what weevils? What, they take a plane from Iowa or something?
Got them.
No.
Shot at Iowa.
What are these things from? Fucking Iowa? These things rolling in from the Midwest?
Okay. Excuse me.
And Midwest fat ass bug.
I Google it. It confirms that this bug is a weevil. And it says whenever you buy Bisquick or flour or anything super flour based, that you should put it in your freezer for 2 weeks. Because guess what? The flour mills, these weevils, they try and clean them out, but they live in these mills. They lay eggs, and then you get Bisquick or flour or whatever that has weevil eggs in it, and if it sits long enough, they hatch and they start living in your shit, man. It's insane.
Well, that's what I was. That's because, like, the offshoot of that is what's happening on TikTok, where so many people are taking those dewormer pills, like, just for fun. They're like, oh, let's see if I actually have worms. And like 99% of Americans have worms.
I don't want to hear the answer.
Like, if you take this pill, you'll have like little worms crawling out your butthole.
Oh no.
I can't hear you. I don't know what you said, and I'm not putting them back on. Cons, you give me a signal. I'm trusting you to when I can put these back on.
We're good.
So I guess
the worms will come out of your butthole.
No.
I guess lesson learned, chaps, is just don't buy flour that comes from Iowa, according to
Kate. No Iowa flour. Fucking Iowa.
No Iowa flour. Shots fired. Sorry. So freeze your sorry, Trent.
Update the
sorry for your shots.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Kate hits. Let's just add to the list of things that Kate hates with volunteer firefighters. Our coworker Trent, who's probably one of the nicest humans on the planet. Mm-hmm. Terrible.
Iowa.
All right. I don't really have anything. We'll be back here. Huge news. We
Out a bunch of
stuff on
this
Twitter.
Should have been at the top of the show.
What are we doing?
Jesus.
If you are listening now, hopefully you're still listening. If you're listening now, Barstool has decided to put all the focus on our Barstool Fund, which is now called the Barstool Difference, on the military, National Guard, first responders, firefighters, all those types. You know the types that have like the flags that then whatever color. If you have one of those things dedicated to your job, we want you to get some of this money from the Barstool Fund. And what it is, it's a fund that was established. Dave Portnoy did it in March of 2020, where we had a big fundraising push to have money for folks that were going to be struggling through COVID
and their small businesses. Yeah.
So if you had like to deal with the new regulations, if you had to deal with payroll that you couldn't meet it, if you're just struggling based because of COVID and all the different things that happened because of COVID, reach out to us. There is going to be a website. There is a website that's called barstoolfund.com/military. If you go to that spot, it will tell you all you need to know. It's a real quick, easy process. It'll take about 4 weeks for us to review to see if you get that. If you do get the grant, it's not like a lot of other grants where there's a shit ton of strings and deliverables. The only deliverable is that it has to go to a business that is affected by COVID or to your payroll to get back on your feet. We want it to go. So we've done stories about like what's happening on the border of at the Texas and Mexican border, where different guards members have been deployed for like a year, and many of them are at the detriment of their own small businesses. If that's you, apply. Send us a message after you apply so we know to take a look at it too. Go to barstoolfund.com/military and apply today. It's a great thing that we're going to try to do, and we have $3 million that is earmarked for veteran causes and military causes. So we want to use it. We don't want to keep any of it. We want all $3 million gone, but in order to do that, people have to apply. So go apply. It's on the retreat.